It's crazy. But I'm passing the keys on to these planners because I'm done. But, you know, it just drives me crazy. But I'll take a look at the need for more explanation.
Now on 41, under shoreline development capacity, I know it's always crossed out, but it talks in that particular clause, 711331, but the site evaluation report, and I guess the question is, does that come up somewhere else, or are site evaluation reports no longer relevant?
They're probably more relevant than ever. So the trigger really is by application.
Okay.
Are there any flags that emerge? And generally they do if you have a feature, whether it's a wetland, a habitat, or wildlife. So we tried to simplify the process, and as I said earlier, if you're more than three, you trigger. The reality is that can be triggered for even one.
Yeah.
Many municipalities today, I don't necessarily agree with them, require the accompaniment of an application for a single lot of a site evaluation report. I don't think that is where McKellar wants to be, but that's where Carling is, that's where Seguin is. I mean, if you're taking off a 5-acre parcel off a farmer's field and you don't have any natural heritage data that says you need to recognize that this needs to be assessed, why would you ask for that? That's where my head comes from. I don't come from, you know, go and spend 10 grand. Like right now, I don't think you can find a biologist that will do something. They won't leave their office for under $10,000. Is that where we want to be? I don't think so.
But it's reflected, I think, probably in the earlier clauses about the site evaluation.
Yes.
I just can't recall exactly where, but so it is still in there.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and by saying you must be consistent with the PPS, you're saying it's
right
there as well.
Okay.
So you're saying two places.
Rechecking on this. I'm wondering in that particular clause, did the MNR wish to have this clause removed? I can't. It seemed to me that there was something that they didn't like in it or something. Or just to flag it anyway and check into it.
Yeah. Well, the jurisdiction over fish habitat is federal.
Right.
But there are agreements between MNRF and the feds to look after the implementation of the Fisheries Act.
Okay.
But I'll see what the background is there.
Recently, accessory uses and the whole consistency between the zoning and the official plan and even other parts of the official plan. In 12.1, it talks about incidental, accessory, and subordinate, and yet in 5.1.2, it mentions the word ancillary. I'm not sure there's any problem with that, but people have questioned the consistency of the wording, that's all.
So I find the words interchangeable, so maybe we
should... That's what I
thought. So we can maybe put them both in both sections.
Yeah, okay. Now I notice you've updated what the ministry wanted with the natural heritage features in your mapping, and also the environmentally sensitive. I guess the one question was on the, it's in this booklet, isn't it?
Yep.
Appendix 1, the natural heritage. I notice environmentally sensitive, and also floodplain, I guess, and fish habitat. We used to have the old environmentally protected EP. Is that now included in all of those, or should there be a separate EP as well? It gets very confusing, and it's so minuscule it's hard to see where they are exactly anyway. But
yeah, it's probably more that it'll show up in the zoning bylaw, but I think what we have is we have new data from the province, which kind of has sweeping designations for wildlife, for wetlands, for significant wetlands, floodplain, etc. So we had, for example, fish habitat and wetlands that we've collected over the years. We didn't jump on a lot of that data because it adds a lot of what I call local wetlands, private properties. And I found that property owners that never had a designation or a zoning on their lands historically and now have that they weren't aware of, they end up being quite opposed to that. So we're using our old hybrid. We're using our old data and not adding it unless it's a PSW. PSWs don't have any wiggle room. So if Mrs. Smith didn't have a wetland on her property historically, and it's just a local wetland, we're not going to restrict that. And it's interesting, I don't know if you followed the antics of the old Lorimer Lake Resort.
Oh, yes.
Well, that was...
You end up draining that.
That's right, but it was not a provincially significant wetland, and it was one that we put on historically by air photo reconnaissance, but when we switched over to go just to the geographic information system, it removed all the local wetlands. So it went back to a commercial resort zoning. And when he drained that, because it was a beaver situation, the residents were quite upset, and they went to the MNR, they went to the DFO, and they went to the MOE to reprimand the fellow and have him restore it, and they wouldn't have anything to do with it because it didn't have any consequence anywhere. So the reality is, I don't want to have that feud in McKellar where I don't want to invite a problem.
Yeah, I guess the question came up, not so much there, I guess, if something was designated at some point and then it was removed, that's when people begin to jump on, why is that taken off if it was there?
Yeah, so...
You explained it, I think.
Yeah, so as I said, I think we're in a hybrid, and we're trying to keep sort of below the radar here to get our, just get our affairs in place. Whether that can possibly happen or not, I don't know.
I'm wondering too on that. I don't see it so much on this one, but the deer wintering. You have two stratums. Hard to distinguish with the brown, some are darker. I guess the question is, and I don't know whether you can answer it off the top of your head, greatest proliferation, I guess, is right around the transfer station and the center road. Is that the worst spot for deer habitat?
Well,
I'm trying to look at your mapping, but
this is actually coming from the MNR,
right?
And oddly enough, it's changed from previous delineation. Some places it got bigger, some places it got smaller, and I don't necessarily understand it.
Yeah.
So it's their data now. I don't know many details about deer, but apparently their patterns are changing. That global warming, for example, is moving the deer into different kinds of habitat areas. It's curious. Like down on near the shores of Georgia Bay, there were significant deer yards around Woods Bay and Healy Lake. Those deer have all left and gone onto the islands because the predators were penetrating the deer yards. I don't know why, but I'm told that by the First Nations down there. So in general, though, the standards that we have of ultimately 2 to 2.5 acres or 1 hectare, that's usually sufficient not to have an adverse impact on the habitat for deer wintering areas. Those are in the technical manuals of MNR.
We've covered quite a few territories.
I just have one question.
Okay, Councilor Zulak.
Sorry, Mara.
No, go ahead.
It's just on the appendix to the wildland fire hazard, the picture. Is that going by that handbook that they had put out here 2 years ago? Do you remember that? It was a handbook of all fire.
Yes.
Is that going by that?
Yes.
I thought that was redundant now, that handbook.
It may have been updated. I don't think they removed it.
I'm not sure. That's why I'm asking.
No, I think it's still in place. Now, I've done a few of the assessments under that manual, and the high-level satellite imagery they use is terrible. So it's not accurate at all. And our fuel is not boreal forests. I'd challenge anybody to try and start a fire in the bush today, anywhere in this area, but we still have to go through the exercise to determine whether or not there are any wildfire criteria that kick in a certain location.
Because my point is, it's all pine and everything. It's all trees here.
Then those are low fuel species. So, yes.
And again, then this mapping will have no reference or no purpose in this document anyway. It's just really just information purposes.
Well, in the Muskokas, it triggers an assessment. We haven't necessarily gone there,
right,
in Parry Sound, but it's my experience that that kind of bureaucracy evolution may occur.
I think in the future it may mean something, but I don't think we're quite there yet with their vegetation. So, but just for this document purpose, there will be no restrictions on anybody's properties.
It's very the language associated with it is very flexible.
No, that was my concern.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I have.
But we, if you, I, Morty, I think you were there. We tried to leave it out,
mm-hmm.
and we had World War III in our hands with the problems.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they thought it was important. And it may be important. I'm sure it's important some areas in our country, you know.
Oh, it certainly is.
Yeah, but I don't think we're quite there yet. No, I have a yellow going right through my property, and you know what? They could be right in 20 or 30 years, depending what, if our climate turns extremely dry, if we have a five-year period of just extreme drought, yes, it may be a concern, and that would have to be dealt with at that time. You know, when forest fires start popping up all over the place, we'd have to go to the dog and say, we better get something going here, and I would almost say where it's going to come into effect is when somebody gets a building permit and say they fall into one of these crucial areas is like, okay, we're going to, there's going to be recommendations that you cut those pine back, 200 feet from your house all the way around, which, you know what, I watched some of the photos of how the fires were jumping, west when they were going, and there was houses burnt down that were nowhere near the forest. You know, the fire had like leaped onto their house and stuff, so it's probably going to happen at some point, but we're just not there yet, like you say. So.
Yeah, and because I've got it in a few assignments in that regard, and I would say that the power of Mother Nature is probably not going to really be impacted by some of the tweaking we did, where I had to cut a tree no closer, have no tree within 100 feet of wooden siding or use masonry. It was a little bit crazy because we aren't there. I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't have those kind of jack pine forests, for hundreds of miles and. 5.61 on the preamble after page 6. Just a lot of this that I'm going to probably bring up is more to do with our zoning, what we put in our zoning bylaw, but 5.6, proposing, the Township of MacKellar supports the establishment of new energy facilities where the lands have been specifically zoned for the said facilities. Have been. So already they are, but they, if somebody wants one, they can do a rezoning. Say if somebody proposes.
The previous government, if you recall, exempted green energies from considering municipal planning documents.
Oh, okay.
So in 2018, when the new government came in, it removed that and gave the jurisdiction back to the municipality.
Right.
Now, that pendulum may swing. That's why I kind of worded it that way again. But you must remember all of the applications for projects that were given to municipalities, but only as a courtesy. We didn't have any control.
Right.
It was between the province and the landowners. But now, if we don't allow them, they have to be rezoned to be permitted.
Well, my feeling on it is we would like to allow them because I just see it as green energy, and with the ones that did go in the township, I see them having no effect to their neighbors, kind of thing. So I'm just in your wording. So what would be the process then? Now, somebody with a 25-acre piece of parcel said, I'm going to designate 5 acres to a solar field. What's going to be the process?
Well, if you're zoning bylaw allows it for that particular zone, you're fine.
Okay.
I only say that it depends on the zoning because some people may want a process to be aware of these things. Like some people, and we're not within a wind belt, but some of the wind turbines are felt to be more of an industrial kind of use.
Yeah.
And may not be felt to be appropriate in certain communities. So it's going to be this council that decides,
okay.
Where they're appropriate, and so
okay.
It would be a step for the zoning bylaw.
Sure. Okay, that's fair enough. Yeah.
I believe in green energy, sometimes though, I don't know if I'd want one of these giant panels next to my barbecue.
Yeah, I think you're right. The neighbors should have some sort of say on it, you know, and with buffer zones,
sure.
I believe, or a safeguard. So yeah, that's fine. Okay, I just wanted to make sure that they would be allowed, and there's the process for it.
Can I just jump in on page,
mm-hmm.
page 7? You can continue on later, but up above is something MNR wanted, I think, or somebody, 559C. It's a report prepared by a qualified environmental rehab consultant. They want a professional. So I don't know.
Did they want that wording?
I'm pretty sure they...
Or was it the other way around?
It could have been. I don't know.
But I don't have that mark, but I can check.
We had consultant in, I think, because that would allow you to have different people. But then there seemed to be some concern, and I thought it was M&R. They wanted a professional rather than someone who just happens to have a license.
I'll double check that. In general, it seems pretty sort of minor technical wording. I don't know that I'd make a distinction between a consultant or a professional.
Well, we are actually, I guess, with our roads. I mean, we're concerned. We want to make sure that it's an engineered stamp rather than a technician. And so I think there might be a distinction between someone who comes in as a consultant that doesn't have the...
Oh, okay. You're right. Well, a CET technician is not
right.
the same as an engineer.
No. But that's nothing to do with that. Go ahead, Mark. Sorry.
I'm glad you got me reading one section in there with regards to Crown lands ever being switched, used for other purposes, that we will have a say, and so will MNR. So, okay. Where am I at here now? Bed and breakfast. Just to say that I'm on page 11. And again, on your comments on the next page, I don't know why I got this here, but I got B&B now in waterfront.
I'm not sure your page reference is here.
Okay, page 11, and then
right.
flip her over to.
Okay, at the top.
Yeah. Just going by what John's comments. Bed and breakfast, they were not allowed in waterfront presently. Is that?
No,
where we're at.
They were, but I believe that they were to be 800 meters. You had to be at least that separated by 800
oh,
meters.
Oh, yeah, okay.
From the adjoining lands, you mean?
From any other B&B. So,
okay.
so you didn't
okay.
have a continuous.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not even sure. Are there many in McKellar? There was a couple, but they tend to come and go. Depending on the owners,
yeah.
it's hard to know. Yeah, I've been not designated. It's like our short-term rentals. We really don't know how many there are.
No.
So there may be some B&Bs that we don't know about.
And again, I think they come and go.
Yeah.
They tend to not have the potential for nuisance as much as
no.
a short-term rentals. Because the owner
is
there.
Yeah.
So you're not going to have a behavioral issue unless it's the War Council of the Hells Angels that's serving eggs. But but there is some good discussion coming forward on the bylaw with respect to short-term rentals.
Good. Okay.
Because I don't know where you are as a council.
No, I know, and that's why we were sort of awaiting your direction and.
Yeah, so I have that's in the bylaw
yeah.
more so than in the policy.
Yeah,
we'll find out where we are when we come to it.
Well, I think I keep an ear to the ground, so to speak, and I think that you're getting mixed reaction from your ratepayers on the issue. If I understand it, some are
yeah.
saying why don't we allow it, and others are saying never.
It seems to be the same at Whitestone. They're going through this. They're revising theirs all the time. It seems to be the hotel type, the larger ones that are Airbnb, and there's nobody. opposed to the other ones where they're renting out maybe to family or somebody they have more control over. So I think this is where we're getting the split in the township, that many of them are probably not problem areas, whereas some of them are. And how do we distinguish, or can we?
And that's probably going to be your collective input that's going to determine.
Right.
So I help Whitestone develop a licensing system, and it has had some, I think, positive steps. Sometimes it drives them farther underground. I don't think all the people that have short-term rentals have gotten licenses, but I would say perhaps 50% have. And in some cases, they were denied licenses because of behavioral issues. So it's sort of been working, but you go to McDougal, and they're adamant.
Right.
No short-term rentals. Stay away.
I'm wondering if there are some.
Oh.
I know that's a policy, but...
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the key is, it's the behavioral part of it.
Right.
If you rent to people that respect a particular neighborhood, don't let their dogs run crazy, blow fireworks, you know, whenever they can, park 20 cars and have all the relatives over, that will never emerge as an issue.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a hard nut to crack.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we went, how far did we go down the rabbit hole to prosecute the fellow in Manitowabi? And then it was decided that everybody spent too much money, let's just stop spending money. And so there was never any finalizing of that particular issue. So that's where I end up uncertain in terms of where council wants to go with this.
Yeah. Although we'll be discussing the zoning, we don't have it in front of us, so...
No, you would, as I say, you will in the next couple
yeah.
of days, which is going to be a little bit more of a roll up your sleeve kind of exercise.
Right. I'm just finding it hard to follow your page references.
Okay.
We have the same document.
Let's try one more time.
Okay.
Page 15.
15, yeah. Okay, the bottom.
Okay, just in general, like the 5.2, actually not in general, go to 5.3. No more than 3 new lots plus retained may be created by consent, subject to complying with all other policies of this plan. Well, that has been the normal in Waterfront?
Right.
Is that now a proposal, the 3?
No, we're not on the same page.
You got
yeah.
15.
Yeah, he's there.
What's the number? 5.12?
Right.
5.3.
Like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I can see more of this, but...
5.3,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I see.
Yeah.
That.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just, I got to stop mumbling.
I was reading the rim.
Yeah, we're looking to get the changes that John had made.
Okay, John, I guess cut to the chase. Is it being possibly proposed that you can allow up to 3 new lots in the rural also?
Yes.
I collapsed them. I think we talked about that on a number of occasions, and
yeah.
we didn't really feel there was a reason to discriminate.
I know you have it in your comments somewhere in the document, but I don't remember where, John, but yeah.
And Whitestone is like that now?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think what brought that on way back in 92 or whatever was with the municipal affairs, they were saying, oh no, stop developments, you know, we're just going to remain the same as we are, all, like all rural zones, just leave them bush kind of thing. And so it was kind of to make them somewhat happy, okay. We'll allow 3 in the waterfront because eventually you're going to want to buy a cottage and move up here. And it was like, okay, we'll only allow 2 in the rural areas to satisfy your thirst to say no development backlot. So I think that's kind of why we did the split.
Well, your memory may be better than mine, but I just today feel that there's no reason to distinguish, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I'm just trying to justify for that horrible decision. Maybe I don't know. But
I don't know. It just to me, it makes sense just to
yeah.
collapse them together.
I think so. So, good move. Okay, this is probably more to do, page 18, 5.17, shipping containers. This has been probably to do, we'll probably, that'll be a conversation in our zoning bylaw, probably. I have an issue with shipping containers being plopped all over the place in high visibility areas and close to lot lines. I think they should be treated a little differently than your normal accessory building. That's my personal opinion, that I just, for some people it would just be, it would lower the value of the neighboring property if somebody was to plop a shipping container right next to the lot line in certain neighborhoods. I'm thinking maybe getting one myself, but I have 80 acres, and I would make sure I couldn't even see it from any angle myself, like, because I think they're just horrible.
Yeah.
So I have a concern going forward to our zoning bylaw, anyways, about how we're going to manage them.
Good point. We get the mixed reactions, like guys like Chris Portillo and myself, all the time about that concern. The way that we treat them is that we limit them, and we also require that they have to be behind the building, but it doesn't necessarily get them out of sight.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be a robust conversation, I'm sure. And I mean, they're very inexpensive ways of getting instant storage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the cost of wood.
Yeah, that's what's happened.
It's crazy. Cost of the wood and shingles or whatever you want to get, you know, and a shipping container, well, you can make it nice.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to leave it like that. You can paint it. You could, you know, doll it up. If it's going to be out where the public will visibly see it, you see where people have put the shipping containers and put the piece in the middle, you know, to make it look.
So maybe Morley's, right, a little more stringent restrictions, you know, like you can have an accessory structure, like if you've got a detached garage, you can be 4 feet from your property line. So if you change that for shipping containers to 20 feet, maybe that's the kind of approach you would take.
That's more kind of what I'm thinking, and I know we can't enforce a property owner to do some sort of buffering between the property line and the shipping container, but little steps would help, you know, what we think with increased setbacks, limiting the, I don't know, have we got a limit on the size, or are we, can we go there, because there's the 20 footers and the 40 footers.
The way that I have the bylaw written now is that it's limited to 20 footers.
Yeah, 40 footers aren't allowed, I don't think, are they?
No, that, not in the bylaw I've been working on. We just went to 20 footers.
Right.
Is it?
Yeah.
You need a building permit? Is that what it is, John, if you go larger?
No, it's just more ugly.
I thought there was something. If
that's
they
a simple
were
description.
A certain size, you didn't need a permit.
15 square meters.
15?
That's 160 square feet. That's the new exemption for a building permit, as long as it's used for storage.
Okay.
So that's pretty close to the size of the 8x20 in that.
160, so
it's right on it. So we got to be a little careful.
But Morley, if we're going to allow it, we have increased restrictions in terms of where it's located.
Right.
We have that authority.
Okay. So you actually been working with Chris then, having discussions with Chris then on this?
Okay.
Well, then I'm only duplicating, basically.
Well, no, we have to take our direction from council's decisions, right?
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Those are irrelevant.
I think he gave us some sheets, didn't he, your conversation back and forth with Chris? You were saying correct, or?
Yes.
A couple of pages anyways.
Yes.
I don't know whether shipping containers were part of that or not. But
we have talked about it in the past. Sometimes the CBO will allow them temporarily while someone's building, you know, if they're putting a renovation on and they're picking out furniture and various materials. But when the renovation's done, they have to remove the container. So
it's just a concern, I guess, because, and I know it's not part of this, it's more for the
Yeah, that's in there as well. Again, that's going to be a council call because
right.
they're allowed by bylaw.
Yeah.
So you have to measure the family needs and the requests coming forward. But I agree with you, once they're in place as a permanent structure, how do you get them to move after 20 years?
Yeah.
And is it necessary for them to move after 20 years? I think we have a whole new attitude about people's quality of living and family needs based on current social pressures. I mean, I've talked to colleagues in the city, and to get a granny suite for an aging parent took 7 to 8 years. What's that? You know, so I think we're a lot more compassionate up here, and it's not going to be the end of the world to allow a granny suite for particular family needs, whether it's on the water or not on the water.
Yeah.
Our critical thing is whether or not you have the services to accommodate that, both septic and water supply.
Right.
So does the province allow a second residence on one lot now? So could that sort of transfer to these garden suites?
Well,
once that 20 years is...
Despite the thrust for second dwellings, the province has ruled through the Ontario Land Tribunal on a number of files that lakes should be exempt from that provincial mandate because we do all our lake planning based on one dwelling, one parcel. So it would only kick in on non-waterfront properties, the secondary dwelling or the secondary dwelling in an accessory building. But the granny suite's kind of a different animal. And I think it would behoove us to consider them both on the waterfront as well as rural lands. That's my sense. Like aging parents are not necessarily baccalaureate owners. So, and you can get into sophisticated agreements where they have to remove them after a period. Some of that gets pretty complicated in my world. I think in the past we've had two or three in McKellar.
Yeah.
So I don't know how they turned out where they sit sort of on the time clock, but I think that we have to consider them.
As long as the garden suite or granny flat isn't the shipping container, I guess.
Hope the doors don't get open
to the outside.
Yeah. Yeah.
We can't live in shipping containers unless there's windows.
Yeah, well, I guess you could renovate.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that, Chris, if you wanted to use them that way, modify them, you need an engineer's certification.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Anything else?
No, I think that covered it for me.
While we're on that page, John, there's a typo on here.
Well, there are a few typos, but...
Oh, yeah. This one here, I'm sure you meant to use the word any, but...
Right, yeah. And as I say, I'm going to pour over them again.
Oh, yeah, and there's others, but I don't need to spend time on that, so...
So, just back to shipping containers, if there's already ones that are in place that are 40-footers, is that... they're sort of grandfathered in that they can stay?
Yes, so the way the planning laws work in Ontario, anything that was legally in place before the enactment of new rules, they're grandfathered as legal non-conforming. So you can't ever retroactively impact a use of property.
What would the definition of legally in place be then, for those?
Well, that's a good question, because if it was placed there without authority, without a permit,
mm-hmm.
it's not lawful. It doesn't get the benefit of
yeah.
that protection.
That makes sense.
And that would take a little bit of research.
Mm-hmm.
But probably... there's going to be such pressure to put these things on properties because of the price of building materials, you've got to probably deal with them.
Yeah. So how does council feel generally with the suggestions, comments that John has already made? I think you've sent this document to Municipal Affairs already.
So. Yeah, I want them to really get a comfort level that, you know, we're not reinventing the world here,
yeah.
And that we don't need the 90 days. That, and I checked my phone, he hasn't gotten back to me. I'll call him when I get back, but I don't want the latest round and the new round of provincial bureaucrats are all like 25-year-olds, and they're out to save the world. So it wouldn't surprise me that they're going to want the 90 days, and we just have to work with that.
Yeah.
So he seems like a fine fellow, but and he gets back to me, so I've got a good feeling about him. But different provinces have different rules. If you've gotten from, like in Alberta, there's no such thing as an Ontario Land Tribunal. And there may not be one much longer in Ontario. Like, if you can't appeal anything, why do they exist?
Yeah.
So.
Well, that was a thing I have noticed, too. And you know, legislation, we have this all the time on our, I guess it's zoning bylaw amendments, is it? There's an appeal period.
Mm-hmm.
And even on the Committee of Adjustment, there's a minor variance, there's an appeal period. But is there really?
The only people that can appeal are the municipality and the applicant.
Okay, so it still is an appeal period then? Yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
Like sometimes you may impose a condition that the applicant is not happy with.
Right. Okay.
You can appeal that.
Okay.
Believe it or not, I've been there. Some municipalities appeal their own committee of adjustment decisions. Although I think you're one and the same in McKellar.
Well, that's why, another reason why we do that. So we don't have to appeal.
But the biggest frustration in my mind is the regulations associated with these reforms. They're just not there. I mean, we regularly put things in the newspaper. We don't have a newspaper.
No.
No.
So I've asked this Blaine fellow, where are the regs? Oh, he says, that's a good point. I don't know. But every time we do something, we've got to mail it to the entire municipality. That's ridiculous. And if you can't appeal something, just let us post it on the website.
Yeah.
If you're you know, community minded, you're going to check the website from time to time on the notice link. So hopefully we get there.
So this whole notice, the tax bills and all that, that might be on hold depending on the 90-day term.
Well, that's a good question. I think. What can happen is that we can have the public meeting in the open house, and then if they want their 90 days, we just have to discuss with MMAH through their one window
mm-hmm.
what items they feel we need to add into our draft OPA. And then we'd have to decide, do we need to go back to the ratepayers
right.
with any consequential changes? And if we do, we postpone the enactment. The new OP and bylaw.
Yeah.
So we can work within that, and that's a strong likelihood in my belief, just given the nature of today's bureaucrats. And if not, maybe we've got some good critical thinkers there, and on we go. Critical thinkers are hard to find.
How are you today?
Okay, well.
So, I have it dated, the notice for July 15th, so whatever documents we have, I think we need to have the drafts in place
yeah.
by that notice date, so I think we need to get together before July 15th
yeah.
on adjustments here and the bylaws. So I don't know if you want to talk about a date?
Yeah, I get it. It's like that.
That'd be good. I mean, it would depend on zoning, as you say, when you get that, you said next couple of days.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
So I think the sooner the better, because I'm interested in that zoning with, you know, how it's going to look and how we've dealt with the structural provisions in particular.
So, it's going to rain all weekend. You know, you can do it then, right?
because, well, I guess it's up to Carly too, what we have coming up. Just
John, you're available on Tuesdays?
not normally.
Okay.
Wednesdays are a better day.
Wednesdays are better.
Only because I'm in recreational activities.
Goals.
Could be tennis.
What about Mondays?
Mondays good.
Do you want to do July 8th?
July
8th?
Sure.
It's a Monday.
Can that be after lunch?
So July 8th at 1 p.m.?
I guess the question is, how soon do you think the next couple of days for our zoning, so we can look it over?
I would say probably Wednesday. What's Wednesday? Get it to you by Wednesday. I'm just factoring.
Wednesday's the 3rd.
Yeah, so if I get Carly the draft by the 3rd, that would give you...
4 days.
4 days?
Yeah.
Is that enough? And if I have it, say, Friday, I'll do it Friday. By Fridays.
Yeah, no, that's fine with me. Everybody else is okay.
I mean, this is my last assignment, by the way.
Yeah.
So
we'll
going
it,
out of the
we'll
blaze
make
of
it
water.
Good.
Well, no, I have legacy files that are still, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen to them. I mean, some of these are 15 years old. I think I just have to lose my phone number.
Well, we appreciate you coming on board to help us through this.
Yeah, there's a cause involved here. It needs to get done. And you know, I'm very interested in the new legislation. It's almost like karma that no one can appeal. So do I agree with it, like I said? I find the underlying tenets of democracy should allow people somehow into a process, so I'm not necessarily ecstatic about it, but it's kind of karma. You know, the NIMBYs of the world caused this. And I mean, everything that goes on out there today, somebody wants to run interference. So that's where I think, and what it's going to do, it's going to turn us into a U.S. kind of system. They don't have official plans or Ontario municipal boards. They have judges. So if you have a land use complaint, it's a judge that decides what's good planning. And that's where we are going. Because the only way you can dispute a land use matter is to file a Superior Court application. And you know what that's about. That's about money, big money. But projects will get big enough that fight's going to occur. So that I think Ontario is going more of the way of the USA. That's my sense. So.
Okay, now we have another matter too before we go to the public comments, but I'm wondering, since you're here, and we could maybe move that around a bit if the public wants to comment at this stage. Anybody in person or on Zoom?
Nobody's on Zoom now.
We bored them.
Yeah. Oh, it doesn't matter.
Do you want? No. Nothing really, because I couldn't quite follow. Because I can't tell who's speaking, so you look ahead to see who's speaking, and then you lose the conversations. So I hear you talking about containers. Okay, so one per lot or something? Or if a guy's got a 2-acre lot, he can have a container. If a guy's got 1,000 acres, he can only have a container. And you may not even see them for the road if they're not visible. If it's a question of visibility and they're not visible from the road, the public can't see them, what's the problem with onions? Like on a farm or something like that, that's normal. Like Peter Locke's got three or four. You know, I got a couple out there and I keep the machine and the stuff. So I can't see it. One you can, it's going to be moved, but the other you can't. You can't see it. And you replace that for storage, it wouldn't be worth the farm anymore.
If I could answer
that's
that.
That's reality. You can't build nothing for 50,000, 60,000 little garage.
Yeah,
so my concern is the visibility is a legitimate reason to limit the number, but if it doesn't exist, they can't be seen by the general public. What's the difference?
And if I could, that's for the zoning.
Oh.
The policy says, yes, we will consider them. The zoning will determine what restrictions, like they're allowed on commercial property, they should be allowed on rural, large rural properties. We don't have a limit per se, perhaps other than waterfront, where you're allowed one. But that is phase two, so you've got to stay tuned, Gord. Stay tuned.
Okay. I wasn't worried about it. I know common sense always prevails, but I just wanted to mention that point. And, is there any way that the mics could be numbered?
Okay. On the
if the mics could be numbered, and each used the same mic, then somebody would come and the name's beside you. Just after a few minutes, you know who's speaking.
I try.
Yeah, because if Dave would say, so I'd look at Dave, by the time I catch what he's getting, I look back and what's the other person.
What I try
it's
to
fine.
Do.
I'm happy with everything that's been done. It's vast improvement, vast improvement.
What I try to do, but I can't always control them. I it's not on there now, what I'm saying?
Yeah, it doesn't have like your name and
no.
Then
but what I try to do is I'll say Councillor Ryland or I'll say Councillor Zuck. Sometimes they're too fast for me. They just start talking and I can't introduce them.
Yeah,
so Gord's saying that it would say Mayor Moore. Then
yeah.
Well, usually does, says. Yeah. But this one doesn't, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why I try to introduce. And
right.
It usually works, but
usually
if it gets a heated discussion.
Usually, we just jump in.
Yeah.
Or you just say, like, Councillor Haskin before you start speaking. Yeah,
and you can say your own name.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, which we ask presenters to do, so I mean,
yeah.
it's just as fair for us to do it too. So
yeah.
That might be a better solution.
Although I just didn't say my name just now, so. But
okay, well, that's great then, John. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Appreciate that. We'll wait for further correspondence.
You know, I'm trying to kind of kill as you go. So whenever I get something I think is relevant, I send it off to Carly, and she's obviously sending it off. I as late as this morning, she was probably already engaged, but I said to this MMA rep, hello, we need to know, tell us. So, but I think he's so green, he's searching for someone to tell him.
Yeah.
So, you know, if it comes in this afternoon, I'm going to send it off to Carly.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
So we're down to 17?
17.1.
17.1.
Yeah.
And we have a resolution 24-393, moved by Councillor Ryland, second by Councillor Haskin. Be resolved that the Council of the Corporation of Township McKellar does hereby receive report PW-2024-04, Center Road Paving Project Updates. And further direct staff to notify the RHH Engineering that 6 inches of A gravel is to be used for the foundation of Center Road as recommended by Bob Hughes. Discussion?
this is a good step, just to make sure that the base, this is always the problem with any paving job, is if the base isn't sound, then we don't get the lifespan out of the road surface. And I didn't see in here if it's going to increase the time of the project.
No, it will not increase the time.
Councilor Zulak?
Just a question, not about the gravel, but I was just thinking, do you know or can you find out probably if they're going to put frost tapers in where the culverts are?
I'll ask.
Because that always seemed to be a problem in the past, and then the culverts heave because they don't have the proper taper.
Yeah, there's technology out there to avoid that. Yeah, we should be trying to utilize it.
Yeah, Lakeshore Road is always bad. I don't know how many times it's been target chipped, but then the culverts still rise up. So.
Yeah, and I have constantly said that when they've done it, even to previous road supers, and oh yeah, we're doing it.
Okay, any further discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried.
Okay.
We have resolution 24-394, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Keckin. Be resolved that the Council of the Corporation, Township McKellar, hereby give bylaw number 2024-57, being a bylaw to confirm the proceedings of Council at first and second reading. Further read a third time and passed an open council this 26th day of June 2024. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. And resolution 24-395, moved by Councillor Haskam, second by Councillor Ryan. Be resolved the Council of the Corporation, Township of McKellar, adjourned this meeting at
12:16 p.m.
to meet again on July the 2nd, 2024, at the call of the mayor. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Meeting is now adjourned.